All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta.
Hello, everybody. Dave Hodges and Doug Thornton here. This is the Doug and Dave Intel Report, brought to you by TheCommonSenseShow.tv. We're really glad to be with you. And you see, we have a guest back on our TV show that we had on last summer. And that show was a hit. People really loved it, J.R. Nyquist. And if you want to go to a person who has studied and written and interviewed extensively on Russian defectors and how what they told us is still coming into play today, Jeff is your source. And before we leave, we'll tell you how to follow his good work. He and I also appear every Tuesday morning at 6 a.m. Pacific, 9 a.m. Eastern on the John Moore Show on RBN. And we have some lively discussions. I would encourage you all to tune into that as well. It's really fantastic. And you notice we decided to do this on the Doug and Dave Intel Report because I think Doug's DHS experience will come into play some, but more so, I want to get his reaction as an ex-Marine to what Jeff is going to say. Jeff, let's start with what you sent me. Vladimir, and I might be mispronouncing his name, Karamurza Jr., was sentenced to 25 years for basically saying, I don't agree with Putin. And the language they used when they sentenced him was right out of Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, in terms of why they cancel people.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's a Russian politician and activist who has been opposed to Putin, and they finally got around to throwing him in jail. 25 years for treason for disagreeing with Putin, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, I mean, this is not a benign government. It's a government that has, poisoned a political opposition figure, Alexei Navalny, with a nerve agent. Basically poisoned the Skripals, shot dead Anna Politkovsky outside her apartment, poisoned Alexander Litvinenko with polonium-210 radioactive element. He died of radiation poisoning. Basically, he basically melted from the inside out. And I can't even begin to list the number of murders that there have been. There's a very good book written. The journalism was quite good about all the murders in Britain in the UK, called From Russia with Blood, and including them trying to kill a judge, a British judge who was in the Litvinenko case. Only they killed a man with the exact same name in a neighboring village. And they got it wrong. They don't always, they're not always exactly right in what they're doing, but people falling out of windows, being poisoned, being run over, being shot dead, found hung in their shower. That was Boris Berezovsky. And the coroner's examination was he didn't hang himself. He was strangled and then hung up in the shower to make it look like a suicide. Berezovsky, the former Putin oligarch. So it gives you an idea of the flavor of the regime.
I remember, Jeff, was this lady journalist whose name has long escaped me, was during the Georgian conflict, and she was writing critical things in a journalistic sense, and her apartment got blown up. And it was a definite observation killing. In other words, this is what could happen to you. I don't recall her name, but it was back when the Georgian thing was going on. And
I've had friends in Moscow that were poisoned. Marina Kalashnikova is one example, the Russian historian. Mm-hmm. Others I helped to flee. But the great former Czech, former political prisoner, Vladimir Bukovsky, helped me get a friend out of Moscow and to Israel. They will put people in a psychiatric hospital and imprison them there still, like they were doing in the 60s to Bukovsky. And of course, they tried to assassinate the Ukrainian president Viktor Yushchenko in 2004. Famously poisoned him with, I'm not remembering, it's a chemical, but he almost died. He had his face was horribly pockmarked, if you remember from that. The
Yeah,
people
I
that
do.
poisoned him, of course, fled to Moscow. So this has been going on a long time, and I think that there's a number of people who've died that it may have been murders, and we just don't know. May have been assassinations.
Yeah, I this has been a long-standing pattern with him, and so the latest here, Vladimir is lucky to be alive, I think, in my opinion. But they sentenced someone last year to almost 9 years in prison for basically the same thing, but I guess this guy was more damaging. The thing that I'm want to look at here, though, too, is this security leak out of the Pentagon. What I see on the surface, and what Doug and I have talked about, is that it looks to us, at least to me, that a low-level guy like this should not be able to access that. They also had multiple subjects in the same releases, and that kind of violates what how most security is
That
done.
it should be need to know, and why would
Yeah.
one person have access to, like you say, so many different topics? It almost looks like somebody used him to leak it, and then
We
he
think
took the fall for it.
that's what we think too. Yeah.
Yeah, and the you don't know for sure in this kind of gamesmanship. This guy was awfully young and could have been an easy mark for such an operation. But you look at the documents. Look, one of the documents caught my attention. It's about supposedly the West supplying Ukraine with sufficient military equipment to equip 10 brigades to have an offensive. Well, my sources in Ukraine have told me that for months, the equipment's not arriving. The Americans are dragging their feet. The equipment's not coming. They're not able to constitute new brigades. And this is from multiple sources. I know a guy that knows the Pentagon very well and was telling me, he talked to an admiral there and he said, "Have we really given the Ukrainians this material?" He says, "No, because I never signed off on it and it has to go through me." And he says, "Well, why are they claiming they're sending this?" He says, "Well, they hold press conferences and these young people go out and claim it and it gets on the news, but we're not sending this to them." And I heard from the Ukrainian side, they are getting some things and they're very happy with that, but they're privately very upset about all the things that are claimed that they're given that they're not. And they don't want to say anything because they don't want to miss out on anything because they're so desperate for anything they can get.
Jeff, let me bring Doug into this because he also worked as a military contractor. Doug, how does that strike you? What you're hearing here from Jeff, how do you look at that? Doug, you're muted.
I think it's accurate. If you look at the amount of attrition that is happening within the Ukrainian forces, this is the third time they've created an army. The past two armies have been completely decimated, if not completely killed off. Then the second one that they created was completely killed off, I think, all the way up until about 100 men, and then the rest are so wounded that they'll never see battlefield again. So, this is definitely turned into a urban warfare, an infantry-based warfare with a lot of artillery, more artillery than we can even imagine, so much that we will not be able to have an adequate amount of artillery for our own forces for another 5 years. Now, I could tell you that the war between Ukraine and Russia is landslidingly going towards Russia. And you know it is because every day you have independent media, centralized media from mainstream media, which means the CIA, and then the Pentagon and White House saying, oh, the Ukrainians are doing great. Well, they're not. The Ukrainians, I have little intel birds that are out there telling me things, grabbing me things from Ukraine and from other areas in that region. And I have more videos of defectors from Ukraine saying that Zelensky should be hung, his entire cabinet should be shot, assassinated, that they're destroying Ukraine, that they're throwing kids into the meat grinder. He said, we have kids between the ages of 14 and up who are being taken from their homes and have an AK thrust in their hands with no combat experience. And the same thing for people in their 50s and 60s. So, you know, you cannot have a professional professional military without the professional military training. What we have is an ad hoc military with United States war advisors. That's our special operations guys. That's our guy over that were leaked, and they've been there the entire time. And for anyone to deny that, it's just foolish. Our advisors are always over there. They've always been over there.
Where's the Jeff? Where's the money or the equipment going? If it's not getting to where it's supposed to be,
you know how much we lost in Afghanistan, right? It was $85 billion.
Yeah.
As of December, the official numbers, and I'm told we weren't even giving them this, were that we had given them about $23 billion in military equipment. Now, we'd had another $50 to $60 billion in humanitarian aid that we sent. And I'm told that this humanitarian aid is being siphoned off and it's being sent back to Washington. That is a suspicion that people in Ukraine have, that there is they're not getting control of this stuff. Ukraine has the problem of having been a former Soviet country. They have a lot of, just like the United States, they have a lot of Russian agents in positions in Russia. For example, the areas that Russia successfully conquered early in the war, it was the local, Russia had a fifth column in those areas able to welcome them. So they were able to come in. The rest of the country defended and wouldn't let the Russians come in. So the Russians have suffered very heavy. The Ukrainians have suffered heavy casualties, but the Russians have suffered them too. The Russians, the Russians supposedly raised 300,000 additional troops last fall, and the Russian numbers at the front are not sufficient for them to continue an offensive. In fact, the Russians are pouring concrete for bunkers right now. The Russians are going over to the defense. So it's a very strange situation. You've got a lot of misinformation coming out about both sides. and I don't think the Ukrainians can put together offensive brigades. I think that's a capability that's, you got to develop in peacetime. And I don't think they can do it. I think the Russians have expended themselves trying to take Bakhmut, and they've announced another call up of 120,000. So the situation's deadlocked, and Putin is moving nuclear weapons into Belarus now. And Yuri Felchinsky, who's a friend of Alexander Litvinenko, wrote a book with him. Felchinsky is saying that his sources are telling him that Russians are planning to use those nuclear weapons on Poland and Lithuania. So that is now I've just talked to some military analysts. They don't believe that. They think that's just a bluff. But I am equivocal. The Russians, look, you had a lot of experts say that Russia would never invade Ukraine. That's nonsense. It's against their interest. And they did. I was one who predicted the invasion in January of last year. I saw the deployments. I knew these were deployments for an attack. I also understand you have to look at what Russia does in terms of China. The Russia-China alliance is real. What they do is in coordination with China. And I was hearing information going back when the pandemic broke out, China, that was some kind of situation where China was actually telling its allies, we're going to war. We in Russia are going to war with America in so many months. And what I heard from Russian sources was the Russians were trying to get the Russians to go to war. And the Russians were saying, we're not ready. We're not ready. We can't do it now. And this is in 2020. So, and in fact, you know, Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam, you had sources there who were saying, well, we were told to put part of our governments permanently underground in case the Americans realized an attack was coming and struck first with nuclear weapons. These are the kind of reports I was getting back, you know, this is almost 3 years ago now. And I can't even, you know, I had scientific sources in Russia telling me that the Chinese were, you know, basically saying, well, can Iran go? Can Iran do something? The Iranians have been like, no, we don't want to do anything right now. And of course, the Russians did jump first and got themselves stuck. So, but you were wanting to talk about defectors.
I want to bootstrap from what you just said. Because Russia may not have the prowess to launch the front that they want to launch or the offensive, Are they waiting for China to engage America to weaken America's potential resistance on their side of the world?
Have you looked at the FSB letters at all? Came out through Paris, and a lot of experts, some former FSB people, are saying these things are authentic. It was a disgruntled FSB economic analyst. He looks like that's what he was. He may be fudging what he analyzes to hide his identity. He wrote these long letters that have been translated about the start of the war and what they were told in the FSB analytics department. So basically what they did is they came to them and they said, we want you, okay, to do the following exercise. It's just an exercise. You know, what if the West was hit with meteor strikes? What if meteors from space came in and wiped out the West? How would Russia's economy fare? And, you know, just give us, you know, your take on it and stuff. So basically, now that's really weird, right?
It is.
Now, this is my analysis of it. They did not want to tell their analysts that they were contemplating a nuclear war. Because what's a meteor strike? It's a nuclear strike. What if the West gets hit with a bunch of nukes? Right now, you know, I was friends with Peter Pry of the who was the head of the EMP commission. And Peter told me for years that our nuclear arsenal was rotting and nobody would do anything about it. And he was holding his head in his hands after one of the strategic posture commission reviews. He said that it's retarded. We're inviting attack. And Peter had friends who were old nuclear weapons experts, long retired, who said that they did not believe any of our nuclear weapons worked. You know, they're way past their design shelf life. You know, we haven't built a new nuclear weapon since George H.W. Bush was president. And when Admiral Richards was in head of the Strategic Command, he testified before Congress in February of 2020 saying, if we don't get a new nuclear warhead soon, within 3 years, he said, our nuclear arsenal will be unreliable. Now, last February was the 3-year mark when he said our nuclear arsenal would be unreliable. We're not going to have a new nuclear warhead until 2029, he said. So he said, I have confidence in Congress that they are going to bridge the gap. Well, that was the Democratic Congress, you know, under Trump in 2020. And they were not going to put money to nuclear weapons. And in fact, since then, Biden has canceled 2 nuclear weapons. He canceled the Navy's nuclear warheads for their new cruise missile program. He canceled the whole program. So we have this problem that if Biden is opposing Russia, why is he cutting our nuclear weapons? Why are they not, you know, there's no competition with Russia. So here they're saying, we're going to nuke the West flat. Oh, no, it's a meteor strike on the West. We want to know what the effect on Russia's economy will be. That's what this analyst was asked, right? So because, and I know about this immediately I understood this, because when I wrote the book, Origins of the Fourth World War, I was looking at a nuclear war, and I wrote this book 30 years ago. It was published, you know, 25 years ago, 24 years ago. I was looking at, can you do a nuclear attack? What are the effects of nuclear war? I read all kinds of studies on nuclear war. There is no nuclear winter, by the way, and there's no end of the world from fallout. What is the real problem is a massive nuclear war is economic collapse. And the problem is if Russia or China nuke the West, they economically collapse. And this is what some of the studies show, because they can't suck off of us anymore, which is what they always do whenever they screw up their own economies. Because they're socialists, they always screw up their own economies. So so basically, I had come to this understanding, and you know, you read Herman Kahn's On Thermonuclear War and a bunch of other studies with intensive economic studies, when economists really knew their stuff. And so these FSB economists, they came back and said, well, you know, basically, the Russian economy is going to collapse. If there's meteor strikes that wipe out London and New York and all the economic centers of the West, we're going to collapse. And they didn't want to hear that. But this is my guess. China wanted to start World War III, and among the FSB letters, they wanted to start World War III with America and Japan, and they wanted to leave Europe out of it. They just wanted to go to the Pacific. See, in the Pacific, Russia, China, and North Korea can unite against Japan and the U.S., and Europe doesn't get involved. They just stay neutral. And then they just have the war in the Pacific. And then they can defeat the United States, and they can nuke the U.S., and they can invade it. And this is what the defector Colonel Stanislav Lunev basically told me years ago. He said, I was there when they signed the agreements. They're planning in the, sometime in the far future to invade the U.S. They've got this, they've signed how they're going to divide the territory, how they're going to coordinate intelligence operations for the years approaching the war, and so on. And this also dovetails with the secret speech of Chiao Chen that got released by Epoch Times in 2005. It was the Chinese defense minister saying, we're going to do a biological attack on the United States, and we're going to own the lower 58 states. We've made a deal with Russia. Same thing that Lunev had told me some years before. And so these puzzle pieces fitting together. So what these FSB letters, I think, suggest is that the Chinese are pushing the Russians to go to full-blown war against the U.S. and Japan. And this is what the FSB letters basically say. And the Russians looked at the whole thing and they said, my God, if we do this war, our economy is going to collapse. Our own people are going to hang us. We can't do what the Chinese want. And so what the Russians did instead, they went to the Chinese and said, look, we need Ukraine to survive. We need to take Ukraine back to have the land and the wherewithal. And you'll need the food, right? You'll need the land so we can make the food. And they said, look, we'll just make it quick, right? We'll just overrun Ukraine. And they thought they were going to overrun it because they thought they had, you know, I spoke to an Ukrainian SBU guy and he said, we fooled them. After the invasion started, I said, you're going to be wiped out. He said, no, we fooled them. We made them think that they owned more agents than they did. And wow, that's... And so so the Russians went in thinking it was going to be – look, and the Pentagon said on that first weekend Ukraine was going to fall. You know, they didn't stand a chance. You know, President Biden offered Zelensky a plane ride to the United States, exile in the United States, and Zelensky said, no, I don't need a ride. I need weapons. And so the Ukrainians stuck it out, and they fought. That was unexpected. Both for Beijing and I, this is my suspicion looking at their long range strategies that if Russia had taken Ukraine, then the Chinese, who, by the way, in April of last year gave a mobilization order, you know, to mobilize their military and to retrofit the RoRo ships to put 16,000 armored fighting vehicles to sea to transport them to supposedly to Taiwan. But Chiao Chen said, we're going to make them think we're invading Taiwan, but we're headed for North America. And I talked to my Chinese sources said that they knew that they had created the codes for a nuclear Pearl Harbor to send nuclear missiles at our fleet to destroy our Navy with nuclear strikes. And so that's the way you do it.
Jeff,
you
could that
get rid of the U.S. Navy.
Yeah. Would that be Diego Garcia as well as Pearl Harbor? And
there's not that many ships in Diego Garcia.
Well,
Our main naval bases are in Hawaii and San Diego and so on, to strike where our ships are and to strike them at sea if they're in task forces at sea and to strike Guam if necessary. To do a nuclear Pearl Harbor. And this is what Peter Pry often talked about, his concern about a nuclear Pearl Harbor. We do not have a strategic posture that is satisfactory for deterring an attack. He was telling me years ago, I called him once. I said, is it still bad, Peter? Yeah, I wake up every day wondering whether or why we're still here, why they haven't got us yet. And I think the real reason is that even if you have complete nuclear supremacy and you nuke another country, a set of countries, you have to somehow, what you inherit is a world economy that is in collapse. So how do you survive and how do you take over the world from then? It isn't so easy because the people in the world might say, well, we're going to starve anyway. Let's resist. And the thing is that nuclear, look at what they've done to Ukraine. They make it into rubble and the people still resist. You can turn cities and areas into rubble, but it's not going to help you unless the people say, all right, we surrender. We'll do whatever you say. Maybe people won't do that. Maybe people won't surrender and say, well, you better kill us because we don't want to live under you.
Do you really think the Chinese have the capability to invade and occupy? I'm talking about the United States, the lower 48.
Do they have the capability? They have, well, General Laura Richardson of Southern Command says that China is engaged in the largest military buildup in the history of the world. right now. And the mobilization orders, look, you have a mobilization order. The Chinese are massing I think we talked about I interviewed Mr. Wang of Luda Media, whose associates had smuggled out a 57-minute tape of a meeting in Guangdong, a military civil meeting about this mobilization that was ordered by the Communist Party. And the mobilization order said that it listed like 953 ships were going to be fitted for carrying troops. And among them, 60 10,000-ton ro-ro ships were going to be fitted for tanks and armored fighting vehicles and self-propelled artillery. Now, if you do the numbers on that many vehicles, we're talking about an army much larger than the army that Hitler used to invade Russia. Russia, a much bigger country than the United States. You're not going to be putting an army, you're not going to be putting that much at sea for invading an island, even a big island like Taiwan. It's much too much transport capacity. So Australia's not even big enough. Their army's too small to justify. You could have enough tanks to take over Australia by loading one ro-ro ship with tanks. I mean, Australia's got a tiny army. So there's something else going on. The other thing is China's amphibious transport is a long range one. That is, in one trip, it can go from China to the U.S. West Coast and carry, I think each one of these ships carries like a regiment equivalent.
And that's without refueling?
Without refueling, yeah. Now, they would be out of gas when they reach the West Coast. So I'm thinking, why are they building these? And then they've got their assault carriers, which also have an incredible range, mm-hmm. which bring, you know, their helicopter troops, helicopter gunships and troops and helicopters. They've got another. So they can bring basically they got enough transports to bring like almost three divisions to the West Coast. With, you know, and the thing is that could be a force that could take hold of ports, and then the other ships just come in and dock at the ports and unload. Lunev told me the model for invading the United States was the German invasion of Norway, Operation Visarebo. And he said Mexico was a key because, look, the Chinese control the port of Ensenada, and there's a broadcaster in Mexico who claims that the highway the Chinese built from Ensenada up to San Diego, up to Tijuana, was built by the Chinese, and the contractors were told, oh, this is our invasion highway into the U.S.
I've heard that, too.
Yeah. And of course, it's like, well, and you've heard all these stories I've heard over the years. I've paid attention to Mexico. I also paid attention to Scott Gulbranson. Scott Gulbranson wrote this book. I think it's probably hard to get now, The Silent Invasion. And he did investigations into Mexico, and he found the Chinese were infiltrating weapons stockpiles, the large supply caches of weapons into Mexico more than 20 years ago. And he, in fact, the Tijuana policeman who helped him get this information was assassinated after he was working with him for a while. The Silent Invasion by Scott Gulbranson. And, you know, I talked to Scott. I interviewed him. I spent time talking to him about this because I believed he was, you know, and because of my conversations with Lunev about Mexico and Canada both being used as avenues of invasion. You don't have a beach invasion like Normandy. You have the ports, and actually you spend decades making forward depots. So when your people get there, the supplies have already been brought here.
Interesting. Do you remember, Doug, you can speak to this better than I can, but Doug, when you were going to Portland against Antifa, do you remember when there were three weapons caches found around the country? And everyone said, well, it came from China. And so people wrongly assumed it was Antifa. And I said, not so quick. I think it might be for the Chinese. Do you remember that discussion we had?
Yes, there was multiple 50-gallon drums that were found, I believe, by CBP in Kentucky. But it had all the components for their assault weapons. You know, not only that, JR, we also have been finding quite a bit of Chinese military rifles on the southern border. My counterparts in Border Patrol were finding them quite a bit. And, you know, right now we have one of the largest surges of Russian and Chinese immigrants that are all men, for the most part, of fighting age. And this is, I believe, alarming because, you know, I mean, do you really need to invade your army when you can just send them through the border as a migrant and say, hey, go to your cache sites afterwards, link up, you know, with your cells? And I want to go ahead.
Yeah. One of the things Lunev said is that you have to deploy several thousand Spetsnaz commanders, Russia planned commandos, into the United States before you start a nuclear war, a world nuclear war. And it's possible that the numbers are much larger now, and they've got these leftist militias in the country they've armed. You've got Antifa, you've got various black militias. They want to create maximum chaos within the United States. They want a fifth column in here. And this is what Lunev said. Look, the Russian army is not, he said this more than 20 years ago, the Russian army is not going to invade the lower 48. Originally in the 1980s, the Russian army, they could mobilize 30 million men during the Cold War. But they can't do that anymore. They lost that ability, and they were going to invade, North America during a nuclear war. And in fact, they were even developing in the 80s the merchant marine to do it. But their economy hit the skids, and they weren't able to do that. So what Lunev said is the Chinese were going to invade the lower 48. Russia was going to invade Alaska and parts of Canada. But Russia would help with Spetsnaz commandos. And of course, they would be bringing weapons of mass destruction, chemical, nuclear, and biological weapons in the country before the attack, because they would be attacking the country from within beforehand, you know, knocking out power plants, knocking out water, poisoning wells, poisoning water supplies, destroying as much as they could. The Chinese army would be landing on the West Coast at the outset. You have to have strikes against the headquarters, against Washington and the state capitals. You have to have strikes, nuclear strikes against our ICBM forces in the upper Midwest. You have to have strikes against SAC bases, nuclear weapons storage facilities, naval bases. That's what the primary and Air Force bases, bomber bases especially. So you need to cripple the U.S. military as much as possible with nuclear strikes. And you can do that without creating very much fallout. You'll have some areas where you'll have some bad fallout that the civilians will die and people downwind will die. But for the most part, they can do most of this with air bursting the targets, not creating the intensive fallout. And then they land on the West Coast. They seize it. They prepare. They get their bases out of Mexico. They land in Mexico. They come up and they just basically start moving. Chinese would have to bring a couple million troops to do it, maybe as many as 3 million, depending. But the Chinese army is, you know, at full mobilization, the Chinese army is probably more than 30 million. So it would not be. They'd still have plenty of troops to watch India, plenty of troops to deal with Japan and Taiwan. Those operations would be going. And the Russians would be helping them.
And That's really interesting.
In World War II, Germany called for all Germans to come back to the fatherland to fight. Do you think that China could mobilize Chinese Americans to do the same thing here once the invasion has begun?
They might try to get Chinese to do that, but I don't think it will be successful. One of the things that Chiao Chen discussed in his Chiao Chen, the defense minister of China, gave a speech 20 years ago where he discussed all this. And one of the things he discussed was Chinese Americans. And he said, look, they're too bourgeois. They're too American. We can't rely on them. We could never use them. And he said, we might even have to exterminate them. And he said, this is a very delicate issue and we don't want to talk about it very widely, but we can only really deal with people who are going to follow our orders. And anybody that's Americanized is, you know, the Soviets developed this language in the 1960s. They called it irredeemably bourgeois, and therefore they have to be exterminated. The Russians, you know, discussed amongst themselves how many Americans would have to die. There was an interesting Soviet military theorist named Colonel Skirdo, who believed that America would be very difficult to conquer even after a nuclear attack, that the people in the country would resist, and that it would require too many troops, Russian troops, and he didn't want Russian troops to be doing it. So he was an early advocate of, like, hand it over to the Chinese. Look, the Chinese, even if China's population is in decline, even with the one-child policy, if their population goes from 1.4 billion to 700 million, they still outnumber us by more than 2-to-1 in population. So it's
China definitely
has a manpower.
Jeff, I think there's one equalizer, though, the Three Gorges dams. If a nuclear strike took those out, the casualty rates would be astronomical, into the millions for China. I don't know if it's enough to offset what you're talking about, but China has some vulnerabilities too. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, General Chiao Chen said he said, "Look, we want to do a biological attack on the United States, that they don't realize we're attacking them, that they're going to blame themselves, they're going to blame corporate America, they're going to blame some other actor. We want to do this attack, and we want to kill 100 to 200 million Americans with this attack that would weaken the United States and cause it to collapse. What they really are looking for is to have the United States collapse to the point where we can't fire back with anything. That's what they're looking for. They want a civil war here. That's one of the things the Russians have been working on. There's a Russian KGB general who's written about it quite often. They want to have us fighting each other. And they want chaos here, and they want economic collapse, and they want it so collapsed that none of our nuclear buttons work, that we're all hating each other so much that we can't possibly defend. Now, General Chi said that basically the biological attack and these other attacks may not work, in which case China will have to accept a nuclear attack. And he said, but if China loses 700 million people in a nuclear attack, that's fine, because if China does not take over North America and get that farmland, we're going to lose 700 million people anyway, because China can only feed half its population right now with their domestic food production.
Is it true that three successive foreign ministers have basically taken that same policy you're articulating right now?
Well, not publicly. I mean, we have Chiao Chen's speech, and then we have you have to read between the lines and other statements. You've had you remember this book Unrestricted Warfare that came out 24 years ago in 1999, written by two colonels. I went over that book very carefully. This is people on the conservative national defense types have been saying unrestricted warfare. You know, they can take a paperclip and they can use a paperclip as a weapon and they can screw us over with a paperclip. I'm just joking, but the thing is about all kinds of ways to hurt Americans that are very cheap for them and it's very low grade attacks. But you know, if you study the book, you know what they say on every other page. I'm exaggerating, of course, is they say nuclear weapons are obsolete. China doesn't want nuclear weapons. And then they go on about how they can hurt the U.S. with all these other things, with unrestricted warfare and doing this and doing that to hurt us and things you would never even think of. But, you know, like box cutters and airline tickets, taking out the Twin Towers, things like that. But they keep saying, we don't want nuclear weapons. Well, here we find out in the last 2 months, China has more ICBM throw weight than the United States. And they announced 2-3 weeks ago that they got the breeder reactor technology from Russia to mass produce nuclear weapons so they can fill all those rockets with warheads. So either China already has more nuclear warheads than we do. And of course, what was that unrestricted warfare about? It was disinformation. So we would not start building nuclear weapons again, because China was going to build a big nuclear. They wanted to surprise us with them having a big nuclear, nuclear arsenal all at once. And of course, Russia has been rebuilding its nuclear arsenal, but you know, we kept our remnant of ours that's rotting away to position that. But right now we're facing not just Russia's nuclear arsenal, which is bigger than ours, but also China's.
Can I ask you a question? From mid 1954 to 58, the CIA, along with the Pentagon, put forth a paper that I actually am in possession of. I'm currently been studying quite diligently on it. And our top analysts from the Atomic Energy Commission said that Russia could have the capability for a sustained air attack from Kamchatka, Kola, Chukotsky, Leningrad, and then other areas, even interior, with their heavy bear bombers, the heavy jet bombers, turboprop heavy bombers, And back then, they said that, and obviously advancements in technology have changed, but back in the 50s, they had the ability to attack with 1,000 bombers or more, all loaded with nuclear weapons, and that they were confident, and this is our Pentagon saying that they were confident that at least 400 to 500 out of 1,000 would make it, and they were all targeting industrial areas, large population centers, in almost every single state, but not every single state.
Are you talking about the Gaither Commission report?
Let me see. What was the name of this one? This is from Soviet Gross Capabilities for Attacks on the U.S. and Key Overseas Installation of Forces through 1 July 1958.
And who produced the report?
The CIA.
Okay. The CIA. See, the thing is you had the RAND Corporation, which was back then the Air Force's think tank. And this was the thing is all those reports got shot down by the United States Air Force, because the United States Air Force said, we can shoot down all those bombers. And that report is nonsense. That's what the Air Force's position was, that the U.S. Air Force could protect the country. The problem was not the bombers. What really broke it up was Sputnik in 1957. Yes. There was a study done by the RAND Corporation, by the way, which the RAND Corporation even tried to suppress its own report. And a lot of the people that did is by Herman Kahn on thermonuclear war. The book is the report. And of course, this was very embarrassing to RAND, because they were looking at, or by 1975, 76, Russia was going to have thousands of ICBMs, deliverable warheads. It wasn't a question of the U.S. Air Force being able to shoot them down. There was no way to really shoot down an ICBM, right? There was no reliable way of stopping one. And so they knew that in 15, 16 years, the Russians would be able to strike the United States with strategic nuclear warheads, and there was no stopping it. And of course, a lot of that study had to do with what the effects of a nuclear war would be economically and how you would deal with it. And it's very similar to the Gaither report, which was partially junked by Eisenhower, because he didn't like it either. And the Gaither report said, this was done by people at the high end of our technical, you know, the military industrial establishment. And they said, look, we have to divert concrete from building freeways and shopping malls, and we have to build bomb shelters for the population. We have to protect our people, and we're going to have to educate our young people about communism, because this is going to be the reality in 15 years. And Eisenhower said, no. He said, we're not doing that. We'll, you know, the report said, put the bombers in the air and be ready. But he said, we're not going to do that. We're going to live better than the Russians. We're going to build shopping malls and have freeways. And we're going to defeat the Russians by living better than they did. That was Eisenhower's idea. And John Kennedy came along and criticized this. John Kennedy said they were soft. Yeah. John Kennedy promised when he ran to have civil defense, which he passed through the lower house, but they never passed the Senate. Kennedy was assassinated.
Yeah, and they had to, and they actually, in some of those committees, the military got grilled by some of the senators, because they said, well, if a nuclear strike happens on, let's say, you know, Chicago, well, what do we do with all the survivors? And they said, well, you know, they'll have to be dispersed. I said, okay, well, if we know an attack's coming in, well, how do they defend themselves? Well, you know, duck, cover, run, pray, and all that other stuff.
Right. Duck and cover is the most effective defense.
And they said that along the sides of the highway, we will have to dig trenches about 3 feet wide, 4 feet deep, and people will have to lay in those trenches. And they said, okay, well, what about the radioactive fallout? Well, I said, well, then we'll come by with dirt and we'll scrape the dirt on top of everybody. He said, well, you just killed everybody. And he said, well, that's more or less what happens during a nuclear war. I said, okay, oh, I don't like that. Give me something else. I said, okay, well, we'll build 4x4 concrete tubes and people can get in that. He said, well, how are they going to breathe, use the restroom, and eat? Well, during a nuclear war, we're not worried about that. And he said, so more or less what you're telling me is we don't have an answer for a nuclear war. And furthermore, probably 2016, 2017 timeframe, you had the United States Air Force general, the head of the Air Force, was getting grilled by Congress They said, how can we shoot down with, you know, our various different munitions? How can we shoot down an ICBM? And he said he related it to be about as hard as shooting a bullet with a bullet, and that their computer programs, 9 out of 10 in the simulations would miss our missile hitting their missile. And if it's a MIRV, a multiple reentry vehicle, well, now you don't just have one thing to hit, you have multiple being broke up. And he said it was damn near impossible. 2018, you have the Air Force, once again, another higher up comes out and says that they were doing war games, and with China and their amount of their hypersonic missiles and their ballistic missile forces that are far superior to the United States, at least in that area, that if they attack Taiwan, that there's almost nothing that they could do, and they knew it.
There's so much misinformation about nuclear war and in these popular conversations about nuclear war that it's hard to know where to begin. Fallout, there's two kinds of fallout, and people don't even know that. And if a city's attacked by a nuclear weapon, there isn't any fallout from a hydrogen bomb. There's none, because it's an airburst weapon. The streetcars were working in Hiroshima the next day. The fact is that not that, you know, only people in the immediate, you know, vicinity of the fireball, which are going to experience the blast and heat that would kill you, but duck and cover's where most people are going to be, and that would save their lives. And people make fun of duck and cover, but there's no reason to make fun of duck and cover. And as far as civil defense, the Russians have massive civil defense. They started building it in the early 60s. They have blast shelters in the foundations of all the buildings built after 1962 or three. They've got leading to the fallout shelter system that they've got underneath. They've got bunkers, 76 bunkers, each one the size of the Pentagon under Moscow, to house the government in a war, under 300 feet of concrete and earth pack. That's just one city. That's all their major cities have this, have been replicated.
You they have built China's in.
There are seven cities under the Urals. Yamato Mountain is one of them. That city, they think there's 60 to 70,000 people in their city. Could be 100,000 people in that city. It's more than it's further under the ground than a tunneling missile can reach. It's impervious to nuclear attack. And it's the size of inside Beltway Washington. You know, so the Russians have been preparing. See, we just threw up our hands and said, we're not going to build. We're not going to protect our people. We're not going to do it. You can protect your people. Now, Herman Kahn's study was, and by the way, in nuclear war, you don't target cities. No, it's much more serious than that. What's threatening you is the enemy's nuclear weapons. You have to send your nuclear weapons directly at the other guy's nuclear weapons where they are and destroy them before they can be launched. And you have to destroy his submarines, and you have to destroy his bombers and his nuclear weapon stockpiles and his command and control. And that will absorb thousands of nuclear warheads just to destroy that, because there's so many bunkers and so many silos and so many ships that have to be destroyed. So nuclear war is not about destroying cities, because what happens is the name of the game is to get nuclear supremacy, where you have nuclear weapons and the other guy doesn't. Then it's like Japan 1945. Then you can nuke a city and say, you're going to surrender, or we're going to just nuke your cities one by one.
Yeah, that's true.
That's rational nuclear war. Peter Vincent Pry won awards for this. He wrote a 2-volume book, The Nuclear Balance and Why It Mattered. And it's volume 2 is Nuclear Wars, Exchanges and Outcomes. And it's extremely important to understand how nuclear war actually works. They didn't make these weapons just to slaughter people or destroy the environment. They made the weapons to win a war. And that's how they would use that.
And Jeff, along these lines, for discussions I've had with some military types, they believe China would prefer to win a war without using nukes, because they want to inherit the infrastructure intact.
They can inherit the infrastructure intact without – they don't have to bomb cities, as I said. Look, if you bomb the Dakotas and destroy our nuclear arsenal and destroy a few SAC bases and destroy a few naval bases, everything's here. You haven't destroyed any significant infrastructure. The country is huge. You can fly over it for hours and hours and see stuff below you that is not going to be touched by a nuke. You know, there might be downwind of these bunkers. There's going to be a 200 square mile area that's going to be desertified, you know, but other than that, so what? There's millions of square miles in the United States, and it's going to be perfectly fine.
Yeah, given what you've been told by the defectors then and what you're seeing now, What do you think the most likely scenario unfolding will be in terms of going to war?
They're trying to make chaos here for us, and that's the scenario. They're trying to make chaos for us, and of course they're going to attack when they think they can actually succeed with the attack, and that's you got to look at their, you know, if they're deploying Spetsnaz now. They've got some kind of scenario in mind. They're going to try to bring the United States into some kind of chaos. Does that make sense?
Well, no, it does. And I'll tell you, because from my end, as I've gotten into election integrity, I have found interferences from three sources. George Soros, that's isolated but key positions. China, numerous involvements here in where I live in Arizona. And then the cartels are now jumping into this. And I've said here in Arizona, if you have cartels, you're talking China. If you're talking China, you're talking cartels to a large extent. And I have seen great inroads to our political system with this, Jeff.
Yeah. Well, what you're seeing in the political system, talking about the one thing you don't want to have, of course, is you don't want to have you don't want to have a nuclear war where you take a major hit. And the Chinese, by the way, are ruthless enough that they're willing to accept that as a possibility. But the Russians are, you know, worried about their economy collapsing. And the Chinese, I think, should be more worried about it. But the Chinese leaders are so brutal, they wouldn't care. I mean, when you look at Jiao Chen's speech, if 700 million Chinese die, they got 700 million other Chinese to take their place. They've got too many people. People is what they have an abundance of. So losing them is not a big deal. But that being said, they don't want to get a major hit from us. They want to be able to get a clean hit. So they have to position everything in such a way that they can basically knock us over with a feather. Imagine if our economy collapses, if we're at each other's throats, that the left and right are ready to fight each other, that they have screwed up our elections, you know, through their cartels and their agents of influence here, so that nobody trusts elections anymore. And then one of the defectors has predicted is that before World War III starts, this is how you know they're going to attack, by the way. This is absolute. They will actually give to our media the proof that our leaders are their agents.
They already are, to a large extent.
Well, that's pressuring those leaders to follow through for what they want them to do. Because, you see, just because you've paid somebody off doesn't mean they're going to commit suicide for you. It means like, well, you paid me pretty good. I did this for you and that for you, but I'm not going to do that for you because I'm not going to commit suicide. You know, this is what happened to Yanukovych in Ukraine is the people there said, we can't protect you if you invite the Russian army in 2014. So he fled to Russia. The thing is that you can bribe somebody so far, but if the Secret Service is going to murder him when they see this president or Secretary of State or whatever committing treason, they're not going to do that. So they can pressure them. They can dangle little things about them in the media. But no, I'm talking about every single general, politician, businessman, all the dirt on all of them will be released at once so that the people in the NATO countries will not trust any of their leaders anymore.
Jeff, we're getting there. Now. Look at Milley's comments. When we left Afghanistan, mm-hmm. It came up in the Senate hearings that if we were going to go to war with Russia, I'd have to notify my Chinese counterpart. And people viewed that as outright treason.
Well, sensible people did. But remember, most of the country didn't view it as treason, and he hasn't been brought up on charges. I'm talking about the Russians releasing files that you will hear about these Russians actually – these generals committing treason where there's no doubt about it, and not just one general here or there. I mean, as every single agent, and then they'll have stuff they've made up about people that is not true mixed in with the true stuff to create absolute chaos on our side. This is from Viktor Suvorov's Spetsnaz book, Spetsnaz. That's Spetsnaz's First World War. That's the chapter that it's in. And he, by the way, describes a phony terrorist attack on the United States that diverts us to this fake terrorist enemy where we're diverted away from Russia and China, and we're worried about this terrorist enemy as a diversion before World War III. And I think with 9/11, we already saw that. And that's where the defector Alexander Litvinenko said 9/11 was a Russian job. Putin was behind it. And why did Litvinenko say that? Is that Litvinenko was responsible for maintaining the secrecy of Ayman al-Zawahiri when he was trained in Russia in 1996.
Yeah. Is it your opinion if the Chinese come here to occupy, genocide will be their main objective?
They're not here to occupy. They're here to make a second. If they come, they will not be here to occupy us. They will be here to exterminate us. That's clear from Xi Jinping's speech.
That's my question. Yeah.
There's not an occupation. There's going to be a second China here. There's going to be no Americans here and no America.
I've been told by a guy who was high ranking in RSOF. He said there will be no cohabitation when the Chinese arrive. They will go town to town, village to village, and exterminate everybody. But he thinks they'll do it mostly with chemical weapons.
They'll do it with rifles, and they'll dig. Look, one of the things that Jiao Chen mentioned is they did a survey. They wanted to see how the Chinese people would react to the killing of women and children and prisoners of war.
That's right. I read this.
And yeah, and of course, it came back 80% agreed that it's fine to kill women and children and prisoners of war. And he said, we're very relieved to know that we're not going to have a serious problem. If 80% of the Chinese people are willing to accept this, then we can proceed with our plans. Because even if their biological attack kills 100 million or 200 million, there's still 100 to 200 and so many million left here that they have to get rid of. And of course, you know, the Nazis started out with Einsatzgruppen and, you know, putting Jews, you know, shooting Jews and putting them in trenches, you know, falling them into ditches and killing them. And of course, that demoralized some of the German troops, and it got out. And so this was not the preferred way to kill people. But well, you're dealing with Europeans. You're dealing with, you know, Germany under Hitler was a church-going country. These people went to church. They believed in Jesus. You know, having them shoot people like that, you had to have – even to have hardened SS troops were demoralized and psychologically disturbed after – so they invented another way to kill people. But then, see, in Chinese history and Chinese socializing, and you go to what the Japanese behave towards the Chinese, this may not be the case. They may be able to have the Chinese troops do it. We don't know. That'd be interesting. But and I think that biological weapons are even cheaper than chemical, because you can use and I think that's what the pandemic is. I think the pandemic was a bioweapon that didn't work. Right, like anything else made in China, you know, it mutated too fast towards the common cold, and it didn't kill enough people right off the bat. It scared people at first, and then they just exaggerated its effects. And I think it didn't work. Yeah.
Can I ask you a question on that? So, the Edgewood Arsenal out there in Maryland, you know, they are our chemical core. They are creating still sarin, tobin, VX gas, all types of stuff that, you know, nerve agents that we don't even know of that are still considered classified, even though we're not supposed to be doing it anymore. Mm-hmm. If we're not going to be creating a new nuclear force, as you said, which obviously you have to have updated technology to keep up with new technology. Right now, we are developing, instead of hypersonic missiles, we're developing a hypersonic bomber. And so far, I think we're at one. And it's in the billions already. If the goal is to fly hypersonic and then to deliver an agent or to deliver a weapon of mass destruction, that doesn't really make sense when you have only one compared to how an unknown amount of missiles that Russia and China has. Do you think that Russia and China could use their hypersonic missiles as chemical or biological delivery vehicles?
Well, yeah, Russian missiles were outfitted to release bioweapons, spores, but that's not really a very effective way to do a bio attack.
No, it's very direct.
The most effective – what's that?
That's very direct, besides cluster bombing.
Well, it's not enough. You need a large quantity of material spread into the atmosphere to have an effective – look, you breathe about 6 gallons of air a minute. Mm-hmm. And so in order to make a biological attack effective, you have to seed a large cold air mass, which would probably take dozens of very large aircraft spraying that cold air mass with And you have to make the particles between 1 and 5 microns in diameter to make them effective. And you see that cold air mass, if you, and I don't know the number of planes, you know, a couple dozen aircraft would be required to see the cold air mass with anthrax, for example. A third of the people in the path of that cold air mass would contract pulmonary anthrax and die. That was the estimate that was made in the 1960s by our biowar people. And anthrax is the most effective bioweapon. You have the Russians mainly concentrated on three bioweapons: bubonic plague, anthrax, and smallpox. And their weaponized smallpox is not like normal smallpox. Yeah, I believe that your intestines blister from the inside and you bleed out. That's how bad it is. So these are super weapons, you know, that the Russians, and the Russians manufactured hundreds of tons of it. So one missile, in order to use it, you have to use tons of it at a time to cover a continent sized mass. And that's just one cold air mass, and that's not killing everybody. And by the way, bio attack like that is the cheapest way to kill people. It's in 1990 money, it's about $1 per kill to kill someone with a bioweapon, with anthrax. It was in those days $660 for every person you killed with a nuclear weapon. That's what it cost to kill someone with a nuclear weapon. It's about $660 per kill.
I want to bring up Operation Sea Spray. Back in 1950, the U.S. Navy secret biological warfare experiment in which Serratia marcescens and Bacillus globigi bacteria were sprayed over San Francisco Bay Area in California in order to determine how vulnerable a city like San Francisco may be to a bioweapon attack. And they also did it in Atlanta as well.
Yeah, the cold, you have coastal air, you have cold coastal air can come inland. And submarines are the ideal way to release it. If you get a submarine off the coast, it can release anthrax into the coastal air. And they were very interested, of course, in doing studies to determine how many people would be infected. So a lot of these studies were conducted back in the 50s and 60s.
Well, they used various vectors like fleas. They used mosquitoes.
Insect vectors are good in tropical countries. And in places, well, like the southern United States, where there you might have chiggers or something.
Well, we heard stuff about this in Florida, Jeff.
Yeah, of course, the problem is, again, it's not very effective if you want to exterminate people. It's effective in a this is only going to affect maybe a few hundred people if you do an attack like this. It's maybe a few thousand at the most. When you're looking at strategic nuclear biological warfare, you need weapons that are going to kill tens of millions of people. Right. And that's anthrax, bubonic plague and smallpox. But of course, if the Chinese, here's a scenario for you. If the Chinese started a pandemic that scared people and their agents that they'd infiltrated the CDC and they bribed Fauci and all these other people and gotten them to pick a vaccine, and the vaccine is made in Shanghai, like the Pfizer vaccine was supposedly first plant was made in Shanghai, and they put a secret sauce in the vaccine and that vaccine goes into the arm of every American, bingo, you have a way to kill every American. You could kill 330 something million Americans with a vaccine. Now that's the best kill shot you could probably invent, if you can get everybody to take the shot.
One of the scenarios I've always played around with. The scenario I've always played around with, and for the past several years, me and many of my counterparts in DHS have actually talked about this, that there would probably be a civil war before a World War III. And I've actually talked to counterparts of Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, who scared the holy crap out of me with, you know.
Yeah, he's a pretty scary guy. Yeah, I knew Peter for many years.
And one of the things that we have thrown around is if you were able to, either from a cyber attack or a mass EMP, which would have to be multiple EMPs, you could take down the grid selectively, not through every area, but you could take down the grid selectively and then spread bubonic plague, biological agents into that area. And while you're fighting other areas, the central areas that you don't need to quickly go and arrest at that point in time, you could knock out the power, hit them with chemical biological agents. While they're slowly dying and festering, you're working your way inward. So by the time you reach the last part, they're already extremely incapacitated or weakened.
Yeah. What I recognize is that there are certain narratives on the right and the left that are clearly designed by the Russians and Chinese. They work both sides of the fence. They try to get the right to be pro-Russian and anti-Chinese and the left to be anti-Russian and pro-Chinese. You had Biden saying the Chinese leaders are good people during the last election. You had, you know, Trump basically saying Putin's an okay guy. So you have this, they've sort of divided us up. And they've playing us off against each other, and they're using this, they call it the scissors strategy. Yeah. And you can see it in many of the narratives that are emerging. You've got Steve Bannon, for example, you know, who's had secret meetings with Alexander Dugin and who thinks, you know, Putin's a good guy. You got Jack Posobiec that has a similar take on it. These guys are being manipulated by the Russians. And you could see it. It's quite obvious. And they would like to, if you created economic chaos and you had the left and the right blaming each other and calling each other traitors, you then have us doing their work for them. And then Russian or Chinese troops could come in to assist either side, and we would be ready to cooperate in our own destruction, not realizing we were being played in a scissors game. And of course, the blades of the scissors, the idea is the blades of the scissors cut against each other, but the blades don't hurt each other. They hurt the thing that goes in between them. And then what they do is they get their agents on the left and the right to be promoted within each organization, and they destroy all the people who have the sense to say, wait a minute, we don't want to do this. We don't have a civil war. And yes, of course, a civil war before World War II would be ideal for them. I mean, before World War III, sorry, would be ideal for them. Absolutely ideal, because then maximum confusion, and we're not united. In order for a country to defend, it has to have a commander. It has to be united. They have to trust their leaders. This is one thing they want to prevent us from having before they attack. And they have a certain degree of confidence they can do that.
And I would say that the American people have a very degraded sense of confidence in their politicians, their military leaders, the intelligence community, federal law enforcement, even regular law enforcement. Americans are very divided now, and social media has done a very good job at doing that. What would you say the timeline would be for when, let's give a hypothetical, sir, if the invasion were to start? And Dave and I have wargamed this a couple times. I believe the Russians will come from Alaska, Canada, and down, and that Canada would actually unite with them, and that Mexico would then have China and then other relative forces from South America unite with them, and then they move in a pincer-like attack, and then the navies come east and west. To me, that's what makes sense.
Yeah, the Russians are going to grab Alaska first. There's even signs in Siberia saying Alaska is ours, you know, in Russia. You know, they're going to look, they have to secure the ocean so that they can come across. So it starts with nuclear strikes. They're not going to begin the nuclear strikes until they think we're already in chaos. The problem with all these plans, however, is that no plan survives contact with the enemy, and they may end up doing some of this stuff without having their ducks lined up in a row, because they've gotten caught midway. Like the Russian foul-up in Ukraine, they could have a foul-up big time starting World War III. They could end up being, you know, getting their pants stuck in the machinery and get ground up themselves. So they have problems with their own populations. They have problems with their own instability. So they could try this on us. It's likely it's only going to partly work, whatever they try. It's, you know, you could pretty much say that their ideal strategy is never going to everything's not going to line up for them. I mean, it could, but probably not, because it never really does. And the really crazy thing is that they're contemplating it, and they're telling their FSB analysts and certainly in China, they're talking about, you know, tell us what will happen. One thing is that China, more than a year ago, a year and a half ago, almost collapsed its own economy under Xi, because they're communists at heart. They do not understand economics, and they could easily just do a belly flop and destroy their own economies and just spontaneously collapse before they can even pull it off. Or in the point of collapsing, just suicidally lash out at us. These scenarios are all among the possible scenarios that could occur.
Is Biden an active agent with China for intended for the demise of America?
Well, look at what Trevor Loudon has written about Biden, and also look at the Vladimir Bukovsky's file of the documents he stole from the Communist Party Soviet Union archive. Show that Biden was basically telling the Russian officials, "I'm your guy. I'm really on your side. I have to pretend to be against you publicly for public consumption, but I'm really helping you." And the fact that Biden's career was basically started in the Senate by Armin Hammer, who we know now from Edward J. Epstein's work was a KGB agent. We know from documents in Europe coming out of French and German intelligence. We know that he's supported by the Council for a Livable World, which he praises to the skies to this day, which is a communist front organization. No, Biden is an agent of the international communist conspiracy. He's a Manchurian candidate like Obama and, I believe, like the Clintons.
You don't get any disagreement with either Doug or myself on that point.
Yeah.
This, we're going to have to do this again. I mean, we're out of time, but my gosh, I feel like we've opened up multiple Pandora boxes here. Jeff, before we go, I'd like for you to tell people how they can follow your good work.
Yeah, I'm jrnyquist.blog. My books are at Amazon. I try out The Fool and His Enemy, which is a book that I really like people to read. It's short. You can read it in 3 hours. And so thank you for having me on.
It's been terrific. And on behalf of my broadcast partner, Doug Thornton, on behalf of the Doug and Dave Intel Report here on thecommonsenseshow.com, we do appreciate you being with us. And Jeff, thanks for a fantastic hour. And I will see you in the morning on John Moore's show.
All right. See you then.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, "Vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord." End of transmission.